Today we're going to be talking about a Kurt Russell Western.
Oh, I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah, not that Western.
Oh.
Welcome to Cutthroat Cinema Podcast. I am your host, O.
And I'm your host, L.
And today we're going to be talking about Bone Tomahawk. Just quickly, if you guys want, you can follow us on Twitter at Cutthroat Cin Pod and Instagram at O the Horror. That's me, OOHH the Horror. And you can follow L at Steel_Lens_Cinema. And I'm not going to mention the other Instagram until someone starts posting on it.
All right. Well, clearly it's the Twitter one that we're trying to build first, but
sure.
No. I'm going to get on it. I will.
I believe you.
No. School's been rough. So I'll just blame my education.
Okay. That works. Okay.
I haven't even posted much on my regular one.
Yeah. Yes.
Though I've actually managed to watch movies this week.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So
we watched Bone Tomahawk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Excellent.
Fantastic
movie. It's right off the bat.
And let me just say, I've completed all the Bonfire Legend movies.
Yes. Bonfire Legend is a new studio that's kind of like just focusing on like rough and tumble, like either action or horror or Western or crime drama, prison drama. I fucking love it. Yeah. Our first introduction to them was VFW.
Yes.
And then
I wouldn't say like new, like the other day, like a few years.
Yeah.
Like 7 years.
Yeah. They've been around for a bit.
I wouldn't say like they just pulled this out of their ass the other day.
Yes. VFW is also a great movie that, I mean, it has every like major, like, cool star from the 80s and 90s.
It's a
and
zombie movie with drug addicts.
Yes. But Bone Tomahawk is a Western essentially with, you know, cannibals.
Yes.
And it's Kurt Russell, Matthew Fox, who, spoiler, is fucking phenomenal in the movie.
Oh, he's
he like steals every scene. Yeah,
for sure.
Patrick Wilson, who by my count is contractually obligated to have a sex scene in every rated R movie he's in. Literally everyone. Rated R movie he's in,
did he fuck? Did he show his ass in this one?
No, but I wouldn't have minded it.
Because I'm pretty sure I've seen his bare ass in multiple movies.
He was bare assed in Little Children.
Kate Winslet?
Yeah, where he's fucking Kate Winslet on a washing machine.
Yeah. Does Kate Winslet show her boobs a lot?
Yeah, she.
Well, she's beautiful.
Yeah, she is. She's gorgeous. Really is. She's always been gorgeous.
She naked in that new HBO series?
Probably. That was a good chance.
I'll watch it.
Yeah.
She's very talented, too.
She is talented. Yeah. And not just because she's got a beautiful body, but she's actually like a good actress.
No, she is. I like her. Yeah. Just about everything I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The movie, again, the cast in Bone Tomahawk has got to be just fucking, it's perfect. And there are people in this movie that as of today were, you know, I watched the movie last night. I really enjoyed it. Today we're going through the cast list, and I guess because of like either how small some of their roles were or like because they look so different, I didn't realize that there were a bunch of other celebrities in this movie.
You also left out Richard Jenkins as the main cast.
Richard Jenkins as Chicory is fantastic. Yeah. He's like the slow like deputy, you know?
Wasn't he like the backup deputy?
The backup deputy. You know, it's clear like Kurt Russell takes care of him since his wife died. Yeah.
But he's also like, he's meant to be like slow or like a little stupid. He talks too much, but he's also intelligent in the sense that he notices,
he notices little things. He
sees the suspicious David Arquette doing something at the beginning, like, well, burying something.
Yeah. He also like knows how to fix a broken leg essentially because of what he had to do in the war and
he retains that knowledge and
but he's, you know, I guess maybe like idiot's font kind of deal. But Richard Jenkins, if you don't know, he's the father from Step Brothers who fucking steals the scene every time he's on camera.
Cabin in the Woods.
Yes.
And
yes.
He was excellent in that.
Absolutely.
But I have to say, before we get into spoilers, though, like Matthew Fox really, really impressed me in this. And
this is his like last movie in the last 6 years.
Really?
Yeah. This is 2015. This movie came out. And he hasn't done anything since.
Let me see. Oh, yeah. He did. I actually saw this other movie that he did. on Netflix, actually. Was it Netflix? I don't even know if it was Extinction.
Extinction?
Yeah.
That was also 2015.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Holy shit.
So weird.
Oh, what's he been up to?
I don't know, man. There was some controversy with him a couple years back, so...
Controversy, but accused of stuff.
Accused, never found it.
But nothing ever came out of it.
Yeah. But Matthew Fox, I gotta say, like, he was... someone put it succinctly, he was no one's favorite character on Lost, right? He's no one's favorite. Mm-hmm. But he was... Like, he wasn't bad in the show, but man, this movie, he fucking, like, steals the show.
Yeah.
Every scene he's in. He has a very, like, Johnny Ringo, Doc Holliday kind of feel to him in this movie.
Hella Tombstone.
Yeah, we're going to make a lot of Tombstone correlations because Kurt Russell's in both. They're both Westerns, you know. In the movie, as a piece of trivia, the holster that John Bruder has, that's Matthew Fox, has the same holster as Johnny Ringo from Tombstone. Oh, you know,
done on purpose,
probably. Probably. And credit to S. Craig Zoller, who's the writer and director of this movie. He's
fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yes.
The lines of dialogue, they're like, some people compare him to Tarantino, but it's less flashy and less distracting.
I mean, I've seen the first movie I've seen from him was Brawl in Cell Block 99, which was absolutely fantastic. And I really have to say he brings out like the best
in his actors.
In his actors, yeah. Vince Vaughn absolutely shined in Cell Block 99.
Believe it.
Yeah, fantastic. And Jennifer Carpenter was fantastic in it. And like, don't get me wrong, I like them as actors, but I really haven't seen like powerful performance from them in a while. And they were fantastic. And then Dragged Across Concrete was another excellent, excellent movie. And I just have to recommend, like, I think he's a fantastic director and he's going places. And going places in the sense that he's not like Hollywood mentality. He's got his own style and just goes in a direction that I don't feel like Dragged Across Concrete would be the type of movie Hollywood would go for.
I would say that again, from what I've seen, this is the first S. Craig Zoller movie I've seen, but not the first Bonfire Legend movie. I would say it's beautifully shot and stylized, but not Hollywood. You would believe that it had a huge budget, but I think the budget for this movie was like barely under $2 million.
Yeah, it was like 1.8 million.
Yeah, it was nothing.
Nothing. And it was a beautifully shot film.
Yeah. I actually bought this movie on Blu-ray, which I don't ever buy movies. I bought all the Bonfire Legend movies after we watched VFW.
Yeah.
VFW was so good. Like, how could I not?
You bought that one in 4K.
I bought it. It was $10 on Amazon. It was on sale. I was like, what? Yoink.
Bought. Add to cart.
Yeah. Stephen Lang in that movie is fucking...
Yeah.
Killer.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch that again soon.
Yeah. I made the missus watch it after we watched it. And then she loved it. Though she gave me a hard time.
Yeah, I made the mister watch it too.
She gave me a hard time. She was like, I don't want to see this. I was like, it's a zombie movie.
Come on.
But they're just high on like meth or was it? I don't remember. It was
coke. It was a special drug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's a clever like story, and not just VFW. I'm talking about both Tomahawk too. Mm-hmm. But it's a simple premise, but there's such, I guess, weight to it because of how you're introduced to these characters, you know.
Yeah.
In Bone Tomahawk.
I'm ashamed I put it off for this long, and I've owned it for a while. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was on like Prime. It might still even be on.
It wasn't on Prime anymore.
It's
not on anymore. It was for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to watch it because I was like, oh, Kurt Russell with cannibals and
just having Kurt Russell.
Right. That's enough.
I'm such a bootlegger for Kurt Russell or nut hugger.
If you saw this apartment, you'd understand why.
I'm a big
The Thing fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of John Carpenter's The Thing.
Kurt Russell's pretty much on every side of us.
Yeah, I have like original artwork and expensive frames with expensive artwork.
I have many books and rich mahogany.
Many leather-bound books. Rich mahogany. But looking at a picture of his face right now, he's beautiful.
Yeah, he is.
But I would buy a original artwork of this
for a Bone Tomahawk. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think my girl would be annoyed if I had Kurt Russell in every incarnation of him everywhere. So
like one from Escape from New York, one from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, she would probably, one from Bone Tomahawk. I can get it. I could sell it to her because I love the thing.
So you have three humongous artwork,
original artwork, and you know
they're huge.
They're huge. They're expensive, and you know. So I'm like, oh, I love the thing. I love Kurt Russell and I love RJ McCready. Like it works. It's perfect. Like now if I start coming home with Bone Tomahawk, she's gonna be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
It would be like, first of all, it'd be like, it would be, what the fuck are you doing? Where would you fucking put that? But most likely it would just be like, the first thing would be like, no.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, well, you know what? You could keep it wrapped up, put it in the basement. And then like when you build your studio down there, put it whatever the fuck you want. So, but yeah, I mean, as much as, like Matthew Fox, like awesome, stole the show. Like it, to me, it's still Kurt Russell who was just like excellent as well.
I think he as a performer also brings out some of the best performances in his co-stars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Matthew Fox said this was his favorite like movie or performance of his life. Like
yeah, he always wanted to do a Western.
Yeah. So, and there was something about him. You know, like you're meant to think because like he's all in white, he's clean, he's like arrogant, he's condescending. You think there's going to be some sort of like betrayal by him in the movie.
And a lot of Westerns have that, though.
Well, yeah. And it just never happens. The group stays together throughout the whole film. And
except for Patrick Wilson, who's already limping around.
He's already limping around. We'll get to the story eventually, but it's
first, we just want to gush about everybody in this movie. Gush
because in reality, I have no complaints about the movie. I really don't.
I don't.
I liked everything about it. It was pretty long, I felt.
It was like an hour 50, I think. It didn't feel long.
It might have felt long because there was so much like of them just walking and talking for the most part. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes. So it's over 2 hours long. And so it might be a little long for some people. But
well, to be fair, you know, when we were talking about The Empty Man last time, I was like, that's 2 hours and 15 minutes. I don't think that it could be like a cult movie because of how long it was.
Now she's changed her mind.
I definitely changed my mind about The Empty Man. But this movie did not feel like it was 2 hours and 12 minutes. I think that's
no, to me,
that comes
to me,
from
it
the
felt it felt like a longer movie, but that's just the journey that they're on. You feel for all the characters. They build them up going along the way.
Yeah.
They're not like they don't just
even focus. Matthew Fox was like kind of arrogant, but like he so in the movie he kind of like boasts about killing Indians, even though that's not who they're going after in the movie. They're going after like essentially troglodyte creatures.
Well, cannibalistic.
Cave dwellers. Yeah, that like, even the Indian professor in the movie is like,
they're not like my kind.
He's like, they're not Indians. Yeah, of course, you're a white dude and you fucking don't know the difference. Mm-hmm. He goes, but they're not us, you know? Mm-hmm. And they find that out in the worst way.
I think he says something what they would do to their own kind or to the children and women. Like,
yeah, to their own mothers.
To their own
like
mothers
it's
or
pretty
daughters
fucked up.
Or something.
And then when you see like the pregnant woman, it's
yeah, like we'll get to that part too. But
it's the brutality once it starts.
Yeah, which is rough. Like in the third quarter of the movie,
it opens brutally.
Yeah, there's a brutal opening with
someone getting their throat slit.
Yeah,
that's the opening shot of the movie. So,
yeah, to tell you like, hey, this is a brutal
this
movie.
Is gonna be fucked. This is gonna be fucked. The dialogue in this movie, I know we've talked about it a little bit. S. Craig Zoller is a writer in general, but he's written books too, which now I'm definitely gonna have to read.
Yeah, I'm totally interested in his books. I definitely would like to read them. He's very, you know, he has some cool writing.
The writing
in the movie. Doesn't feel like you were saying like Westernish, you know, like a Western,
right?
It's like a mix of both, but it's very like good dialogue.
Yeah,
it didn't feel like that old school Western, though. Some of the wording,
like "What are you doing in my breakfast?"
Yeah,
like I get it. I want to explain it in a certain way. It doesn't feel like they're talking in like modern day speak in a Western, but it doesn't feel like they're forcing the actors to speak in like old timey, you know, oh, we're on the range and like nobody really has an accent. It's just kind of,
or I'm your Huckleberry.
Or I'm your Huckleberry. Although Tombstone did do it very well. And you were saying also how Kurt Russell's acting in this was maybe even better.
Oh yeah. Than Tombstone. I mean, yeah, I know it's 20 years later and stuff, but he definitely, I liked him better in this than like, don't get me wrong, I love Tombstone, but there's a difference, you know, and I'm sure it'll like upset people and stuff, but this was a way better performance in terms of acting. Like if you go back,
he's more subdued.
Yeah. If you go back and watch Tombstone, you know, and then you see his like perform his like Tombstone acting and this, you know, and he's like, run you cur, tell all the other cur the law is coming and hell's coming with me. You hear?
Oh, you brought down the thunder. Now yeah. You got it.
Yes. You know, like,
I mean, granted it's him being angry in Tombstone. Yes, like he doesn't, yeah.
But
you know what I don't like about Tombstone?
What?
The love story.
Yes.
That's literally the only part about Tombstone that if they cut out every piece of it, I would have been fine.
Yeah.
And like, especially when Kurt Russell has to act all lovey dovey, it's not a great look for him.
Yeah, he didn't do it too well.
He didn't do it too well. It was always like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Laughter and like love. It just, it's not, it feels very out of place for Tombstone.
And let's be honest, Val Kilmer stole the show in that
Val
movie.
Val Kilmer fucking stole that movie.
But not just Val Kilmer, like, it wasn't just Val Kilmer.
Michael Bean and Val Kilmer stole that movie.
And even, what's his face?
Well, bye. That guy?
Yeah. Powers Booth.
Powers Booth. That's Powers it. Booth, oh, yeah. Rest uh-huh. in peace, Powers Booth.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he was fucking.
He's dead, right? I'm not like making a mistake.
Yes, no, okay. I think he died as Curly Bill. Curly Bill. Curly Bill. Yeah, like he was excellent. I thought he was fantastic. Well, bye.
Bye.
And what's his face was great in it. The bumbling idiot over there. Like I love Bill Paxton, but I didn't like his performance was like, ugh, you know, yeah. Like not ugh, but it was just, don't get me wrong. I love Tombstone.
Yeah.
But it just, in terms of like acting and performances, like they were like a little all over. Cause the
that's
place.
Also like a 2-hour movie, yeah. But realistically and could have been cut down.
You have Stephen Lang as Ike, you know? That was Stephen Lang, just so you know.
Ike?
Yeah. As the bumbling...
Was it?
Yes.
No, it wasn't.
Yes. Hold on.
Wait, wasn't that Billy Bob Thornton? No, Billy Bob Thornton was Ed or something. Oh, Ed, I didn't realize you were still here. You may go.
No. Ike Clayton, Stephen Lang.
Okay. Speaking of the connection to Bonfire Legend...
He thinks Val Kilmer robbed him of all the money. He's the one wow. that where
people look very different. So
in
when
that movie,
well, the fact that like I didn't realize that Stephen Lang was Freddie Hines from the original Manhunter movie.
Oh, I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, holy curly shit. Redhead, chubby.
Wow.
And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Is it not crazy that Stephen Lang is only like getting main roles now?
Now, well, that's why I'm okay with James Badge. Yeah, but boom.
I knew what you were gonna say.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh yeah, he's getting main roles in his 40s. But you know what? Fine.
Well, at least as long as it's happening.
As long as it's happening,
these are talented guys.
Right. Stephen Lang is a fucking Stephen Lang can carry almost every movie he's in by himself.
Well, hello, what's his face in Bosch?
Titus Welliver.
Yeah.
Titus Welliver has been acting since he was like in his what 20s.
Yeah, and he's a fantastic actor. That like I'm so glad he got some sort of main role because he's fantastic. Bosch is a great show.
Yeah,
you know, and he's very talented.
So can I tell you something?
I thought you were giving me a high five.
You know, I agree.
High five.
But mm-hmm. Let me tell you something.
Okay,
so I'm watching Shark, and it was an episode where James Woods has to go to Mexico to retrieve someone. And there's a former client that he knows down there who he helped escape to Mexico. And I swear to God, in my head, I was like, I guarantee you it's Titus Welliver because that's the kind of roles he would play. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, the car pulls up and fucking Titus Welliver walks out. I was laughing to myself for like 10 minutes. But yeah, Titus Welliver is another great actor who, thank God, has now gotten roles. Like, Bosch is an amazing show, even though I'm like 2 seasons fucking behind.
Only 1 season behind.
But yeah, no, it's there's these actors who maybe should have gotten bigger roles when they were younger. I'm at least happy that they're getting them now.
So,
yes. Should we talk the actual movie?
Yes. I'll read the description.
Sure.
In the dying days of the Old West, an elderly sheriff and his posse set out to rescue their town's doctor from cannibalistic cave dwellers.
Yeah. So the movie opens to set the tone, to let you know.
What a nice throat slash.
With a nice throat slash. David Arquette is literally like just fucking ripping someone's throat apart with a knife to steal from them.
Doesn't he like not do it properly?
That's the other guy.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the other people whose throat he slashed, he didn't quite do it. So Sid Haig had to finish the job.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Sid Haig. Yeah. It's a brutal opening. And there is a little bit of like banter there between Sid Haig and David Arquette. Kind of Tarantino-ish. Very opening of Reservoir Dogs kind of feeling. But again, not as flashy, I would say.
No, not as distracting
as maybe some of the dialogue. Like some of the dialogue, if you think about it in like Pulp Fiction and Inglourious Bastards, those movies are phenomenal, don't get me wrong. But like some of it can be distracting away from the story.
Like just so much talking and dialogue.
Yeah. And it's clever. It's great. But again,
you lose
a little bit of the movie in your own dialogue, which I think is a big complaint about The Hateful Eight, funny enough, but I haven't seen it.
I don't even remember much about it.
Which is another Kurt Russell Western.
But do I not remember the movie plot that much because of all the dialogue?
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
So this movie is, you know, when it's two people on a scene, it's, you know, maybe a little bit more dialogue heavy, but when there's multiple people around, they kind of keep the dialogue tight.
Which is funny because one of the characters in this movie, Chicory, talks a lot.
Yeah, he does. Richard Jenkins, who's, again, literally some of the best parts of Cabin in the Woods and Step Brothers and used to do a bunch of Farrelly Brothers movies. But like, my God, the man stole the show in Step Brothers when he's like, shut the fuck up, Dale. You know, every time he says something to Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, when they're like, can we make bunk beds? And he's like, I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Richard Jenkins is amazing.
He was the dad or the neighbor in The Shape of Water, right? Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah, no, he wasn't. Was he the neighbor? He was the deaf girl's neighbor who was gay.
Was she deaf or blind?
She was deaf.
She was deaf?
Yeah. Michael Shannon played a scuzzy bastard who wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Richard Jenkins. But again, everything Richard Jenkins has been in.
Yeah, I really liked him. In The Shape of Water. He was great in it.
Yeah.
Did you ever see it?
I don't think I actually saw it, no. But every other thing I've seen in him, like, with him in it, I've enjoyed. And even if I didn't enjoy the whole movie, I enjoyed his performance in it.
And he's done like a shit ton of movies.
Richard Jenkins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's so many movies. And he's never really played like the star, you know?
Yeah.
So
he's a character actor. He's a strong character actor.
Yeah, he is. And he was basically like co-star.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a little bit like maybe slower, you know, he's, Kurt Russell takes care of him. He's the sheriff, obviously Kurt Russell. And, I don't know. It's weird. 'Cause you can almost see this movie as a much later sequel to Tombstone, you know?
Where
in a way,
right? Like, I'm waiting for those YouTube videos of what happened to Wyatt Earp after he left Tombstone.
Yeah,
right?
You know.
I think they said he died of died next to her, his wife at the time,
his second one, whatever.
Whatever. The second one.
I really hated the love story in Tombstone.
Yes, I know. But you find out in the movie, you know, when David Arquette and
Sid Haig,
mm-hmm. after they killed and robbed the men, they start hearing this awkward
howling, which when we get to it, I'll say like what I thought about that. And I really did like it, but so they hear this howling as they're walking through the hills. They assume, you know, the gunshot, you know,
set off wolves,
something,
or coyotes,
wolves,
or some
or
sort of
the law, because they hear like galloping. I couldn't think of the word.
you were just doing.
I was doing the fucking the motion, not that you could see. But yeah, they were galloping. They hear the galloping, and then very suddenly they get attacked. Sid Haig gets an arrow through the throat. And David Arquette manages to run away,
but not before disturbing a sacred shrine.
But he's also like, you kind of like vaguely see it in the background. You see Sid Haig getting stabbed, but you can't really tell. Later on, you find out that
you also see like his guts fall out.
Yeah,
if you're not paying attention, yeah, you don't really see it. But if you're looking directly at him, you do see his like intestines.
Yeah, he's being like disemboweled.
Yeah.
Later on, they cut to the town of Bright Hope, which is where, you know, all these characters live. Kurt Russell is making chowder. Richard Jenkins comes in to tell him that he sees like a suspicious character bearing something, and that's David Arquette. And, you know, he makes sure he eats. You know, you can clearly see something's like a little off of Richard Jenkins. So they go and check on the situation where David Arquette is. And David Arquette, even in this movie, he doesn't have like a ton of dialogue after the opening scene, but he's, you know, he's pretty good in it too.
Yeah, I don't have really complaints
he's
about
like,
him.
He's like talking back to the sheriff, and then
this whole time though, I think you skipped over. You already introduced to Matthew Fox had already come in. Asked you introduced to Matthew Fox as this, you know, well dressed. He tells where he meets the pianist there. He pays him to play three songs, and he has to buy him a drink.
Yeah. By the way, the pianist is the principal from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're a slacker.
You're a slacker.
You also meet Patrick Wilson and his wife.
Yeah. And he's all fucked up because he was fixing the roof during a storm and hurt his leg.
He fell off the roof.
Fell off the roof, broke it. His wife is, I don't think they keep calling her like a doctor in description, but I think she's technically just like trained as either a nurse or a doctor, because they said that they tried to get the doctor, but he's usually drunk. So they had to go get her.
Well, she's technically like the only reliable town doctor that there is,
because the main doctors are drunk.
Unreliable.
Yeah.
Which is what, and they fetch. Well, I guess talk about how then Kurt Russell shows up and questions David Arquette.
Yeah, and then shoots him when he starts attacking.
Yeah.
He shoots him in the leg.
Well, he tries to run.
He pushes Chicory off of him. He tries to run, and Kurt Russell shoots him in the leg. So then they go, and Matthew Fox goes to fetch.
Which is a regular that he does.
Well, you find out when Matthew Fox goes to get the doctor, she's like, what happened? And he's like, oh, he had to shoot a suspect. She goes, so I had to take a bullet out of someone's leg. And so it was very specific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was like great, you know, which is also kind of what gave me Tombstone vibes, where it's like his reliance on violence is just like, I'm going to shoot you in the leg if you don't do what I say.
Yeah.
You know, there is a sex scene in between. Just before that. So like Patrick, again,
was that necessary?
I mean, I was okay with it.
I was okay with it too. Yeah.
Patrick Wilson in every rated R movie he's in is fucking like there's no, I don't know why, but
I've only seen him naked twice, and that's in this and in the one with Kate Winslet.
Watchmen.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Three.
There's also one called like, I think Zipper with Lena Headey, and he's banging hookers in that one.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he is in
Patrick Wilson gets busy in these movies, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Aren't the Conjuring movies rated R? I don't see him naked in that.
I don't know. Are they? I thought they were PG-13.
Oh, they might be. I mean, they want to appeal to a wider audience. So I could see them being PG-13.
Yeah.
Are you looking it up?
Yeah, now I'm checking.
Though I think all horror should be rated R.
I agree.
What was the wife's name? She was actually really good.
The Conjuring was rated R.
Oh, see? Okay. Maybe the third one was PG-13.
Maybe. The wife was super pretty in this.
She was talented too.
A very talented actress. Yeah. Yeah. You believe her anger later on after she's been caught at the deputy and his...
With bringing sheriff. Along the husband. What was her name in this? What else has she been in, actually?
Well, her name is Mrs. O'Dwyer.
Yeah,
well,
duh.
Christ, I need to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just as a side note, because apparently everybody and their mother is in this movie, including Kurt Russell.
That was a good movie.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it.
Pretty long. That's where everybody was mad that Brad Pitt gets into a fight with Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis?
Bruce Lee.
I could see Brad Pitt getting into a fight with Bruce Willis, though.
Oh, there she is. That's Samantha. Oh, she's got dark hair. That's why I couldn't tell.
So, again, like, we can't stress enough. Everybody's performance in this movie is fantastic. So, the inciting incident is they go get her. They bring her to the station.
The sheriff's station.
The sheriff's station where they're keeping David Arquette. And she works on him. Chicory says he'll stay for the night. But he's like, no, we're going to have our other deputies stay to make sure that everybody's okay.
Deputy Nick.
Deputy Nick. Poor Deputy Nick. So later on the next morning, someone's farm hand gets killed. I think the bartender's farm hand gets killed. He tells the sheriff, then they go check the situation. Then they go check the sheriff's station. They realize everyone's gone. So that's kind of the inciting incident for the movie. They let Patrick Wilson know. And of course he's, you know,
Adamant about
going to get his wife, even though he literally has a broken leg. Matthew Fox is like, I feel responsible. I told her
to come.
I dragged you both into this, so I'm going to come as well.
Which is honorable.
There's a scene in a bar where they kind of all decide that they're going. So Patrick Wilson decides he's going. The sheriff obviously says he's going to go. Chicory is told to stay behind, and he's like, absolutely not. He goes, I'm your backup deputy for a reason, and your deputy's missing, so I'm coming with you. They want the professor, who's an American Indian, to come, and he says, absolutely not. And they're like, why? You're afraid of your own? And he's like, well, one, they're not my own, but it figures a white guy like you couldn't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. He goes, I don't want to get killed because they're not Indians. They're troglodytes. They're cave-dwelling cannibals who would rape and murder their own mothers. And that's pretty much a verbatim line that he says from the movie. The bartender, who again at the time, like one of the bartenders in the scene, not just the owner of the bar, is Michael Pare. Who's, if you ever seen Eddie and the Cruisers or Streets of Fire with William Dafoe, he's in those movies. Sean Young is the mayor's wife, who,
yeah, like a lot of
like the actors who at the time when I was watching the movie, like it didn't, their faces didn't even ring a bell to me.
Yeah, I had no idea Catherine Morris was Kurt Russell's wife in the movie.
Catherine Morris is the like cold case chick actress from the TV series,
and she was like, in Minority Report, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was the wife.
She was the wife.
She was Tom Cruise's wife.
So weird how she plays. She was Tom Cruise's wife in Minority Report, and then she plays a Kurt Russell's much older wife.
Yeah,
you know, like
a few years later.
Yeah.
But she's. I mean, like for the few minutes she's in the movie, she's good. Mm-hmm. You feel her connection between Kurt Russell. They have good chemistry.
She begs him to come back.
Yeah, she's like, please don't. She said first, like, please don't go.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, all right, well then please come back. And
yeah,
that's also sad.
Well, give it away.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Kurt Russell doesn't make it, sorry, but he
goes down to blaze.
He goes right, exactly. Then they trek on, and then a majority of the movie is really them just like
traveling
from point A to point B, getting like running into thieves.
Where Matthew Fox shows how cold and
That bar scene, it ends with him saying like, I'm gonna come with you because I feel responsible and because I've killed
Indians.
Well, not even that. He said, I've killed the most Indians than anyone here. And the Indian professor is like, that's a terrible thing to boast about. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's not boasting. It's just a fact. like he has. But his backstory as well, where you're like, oh, he seems a little skeezy. He's just like, he's just out to kill Indians. You also find out while they're talking and while you're finding out, he said,
When they're on their journey,
Chicory asks him, like, how many have you killed? And he's like, plenty. And he goes, well, why don't you like Indians? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, you should ask my mom and my sisters why I don't like Indians. He's like, I never met them. He goes, exactly.
Yeah, they're so dead.
The implication being that Indians killed his mom and his sisters, you know?
Now he's out for revenge.
And he's out for revenge.
Like a lifelong revenge. Like,
yeah, he's never been married. He's never, like, that's just his whole...
He boasts about it, that he's smarter than all the men there.
Well, I think he made the joke that he's smarter than all the men, but then when Chicory kind of seems, like, upset about that statement, he's like, well, obviously I'm smarter. He's like, you're a widow. They have wives. He goes, no smart man gets married, you mm-hmm. know? And then Chicory kind of, like, laughs and walks away.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, the dialogue in the movie, funny, but not like so like ha ha ha.
Yeah, there was some comedy in it, but it's never over the top. Let's say like Tarantino does it, and it just flows. And the rest
like a
of
natural
the movie,
conversation.
Yeah, the point of once they leave their town of
Bright Hope,
which. It's funny in a way that the movie starts to lose hope as they
go further away from the town,
which as I didn't really notice when I was watching it, but I saw it on when I looked at the review from
Red Letter Media
that I didn't notice it at the time. But yes, as they leave Bright Hope, the scenery changes from this green looking environment to like a more
desolate environment, and to then red, this, rocky,
yes, to this then like pure dried out, like
primordial is what they said, like literally cave, just like, caves, yes, and cave dwellers. They're all it's again, the cinematography in the movie just kind of like works with the environment they're trying to show. Like you almost feel safer in the town, even though these people got kidnapped from there.
Yeah, which of course was no matter how you look at it, it was the fault of David Arquette that he led them. You know, they were hunting for him for disrupting the shrine.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, it's his fault.
Yeah.
But the rest of the movie up until the final act basically is just them interacting with each other, which then builds their character. And then obviously you feel sorry and bad for Patrick Wilson, who's just stumbling along the way, feeling like... You know, you're like, oh my God, he's got the broken leg, the reset leg. I mean, well, they reset it afterwards.
After he tries to punch Matthew Fox in the face for making a comment about his wife.
He does punch him.
Oh, he does manage to punch him?
Yeah, he does punch him, and then the leg breaks again.
Yeah.
And then, well, they think for a while that he's taking the morphine, but he's not. And they take it from him. They walk. Their horses get stolen from the...
He's pouring it on his wound. Mm-hmm. So the wound doesn't feel bad, but he's not taking it.
Yeah. And it's just... It builds up the character. It's kind of like a...
It's also a good way to not make him a fucking whiner. And I know that sounds silly, but like... You're creating a situation where this guy who's in pain, they've managed to lose their horses. That scene with Matthew Fox having to shoot his own horse.
Oh, I
that
felt,
was fucking brutal. That was sad.
Yeah.
And I think one of the characters he says, you know, after these people steal their so two like Hispanic or Mexicans or something
show up
in the middle of the night. And Matthew Fox shoots them because he's like
in cold blood,
cold blood, right?
Yeah, they're like, Kurt Russell's like, put your guns down, come closer, show that you're friendly, that you're not trying anything. They're like, no, we don't want any problems, you know.
And then Matthew Fox just fucking kills them.
The minute they put their guns down, Matthew Fox shoots them,
right?
Like,
in a way,
no remorse.
Is right too, though, because he was right. They were there to steal from them, and they did have another person, and possibly, well, because the third person in the party is stabbing.
Matthew Fox. When they moved to another location.
Right. So they had more people there because someone stole the horses that they were with.
Well, there was more than one more person. Yeah,
there was a few more people.
Yeah, because Patrick Wilson kills the one that's trying to kill Matthew Fox. kill Matthew Fox while somebody else is stealing the horses.
Well, other people are stealing because it's more than one horse.
But yeah, the scene where Matthew Fox is like, no, my horse never would have gone with them. She only trusts me.
One of the characters is like, you trained your horse in bigotry?
Yeah, Chicory, I think, says it.
Oh, yeah. And then he's like, no. He's like, I just trained her to be loyal to me only.
To me only.
And then eventually Patrick Wilson's like, I think you're right. She put up a fight. And you don't see the horse, thank God. You just hear it kind of like neighing, like it's in pain. And then Matthew Fox walks up to his like teary eye and he's like, thank you for your service. And then he puts it out of his misery.
Oh my God. It's brutal.
It's brutal. This fucking movie is brutal.
Yeah. Well, it just shows you, right? From the moment they leave Bright Hope, it just goes down a downward trajectory of like despair. Right.
Yeah.
So, but you know, at the same time though, it builds this like character, like you have such great character.
You maybe don't love Matthew Fox at the beginning, and like you maybe not even don't even love him at the end, but you can appreciate what he was trying to do.
Yeah, well, he protected them.
He did, and he was right to say so. He's like, I'm the smartest one here.
Yeah, and I know what goes on out here.
Yeah.
So he probably saved their lives
a couple of times.
And let's be honest, they probably said, oh, maybe he was right.
Maybe he was right.
Those men, we'd probably all be dead.
If we didn't. Right.
Because look, you had one of them stabbing him, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
What if they were all, those men all...
were still alive. Yeah. It would have outnumbered.
If he wasn't setting those booby traps, they'd probably be dead. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
But, and then let's be honest, what do you say? He talked about Patrick Wilson's wife.
That's what got him punched, because earlier in the movie when he came to get her for the thing, Patrick Wilson's like, don't make any flirtations at my wife, and he's like, yeah, you have my word. And then later on he makes the joke about making flirtations at his wife after she's been kidnapped, and he fucking decks him.
It triggers him.
Understandably.
But stupid at the same time.
Definitely.
For Patrick Wilson.
A little bit frustrating with Patrick Wilson that he keeps like fucking his leg up, and I'm like, bro, just fucking be careful.
Yeah. But, and then you gotta think to yourself too, like, oh, how are you wearing boots with that? Like, I mean, what else were they wearing at the time?
Boots are a pain in the ass to put on.
Yeah.
If you've never put on a pair of cowboy boots.
Yeah. Especially you have like muscular thick calves and stuff, you know?
Yeah, same.
So, yeah, me too. Yeah, breaks his leg after decking him.
Yeah.
Is useless, but they leave.
You kind of, and the way the story is going, you kind of get the feeling that he's just not going to make it. But again, not because he's complaining or whining, but like Patrick Wilson's performance as someone who's in physical pain, very good.
Yeah, I didn't feel.
Hard Candy, that's another one where he's not fucking. Sorry. Just.
Well,
but the
Ellen Page is a minor in that movie.
Well, true, but the whole, if you have not watched Hard Candy, folks, please go and watch it. It's phenomenal. It's amazing. The movie is so well made for fucking nothing budget, and Patrick Wilson and Elliot Page. Mm-hmm. Like just bouncing off of each other.
They're the only two people in the movie, if I remember, right? And then like
there's one. Sandra Oh shows up for 2 seconds later on in the movie.
Was she a cop or something?
No, she was Patrick Wilson's neighbor.
Oh, neighbor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. That movie's fucking fantastic. Yeah. But yeah.
You're almost meant to believe that he was innocent, but he turns out to be.
Well, don't spoil it.
That movie is like 15 years old.
It doesn't matter. It's still a great movie that people should go into blind.
Well, we're talking spoilers, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, whatever. Either way, watch the movie. So Patrick Wilson gets left behind after he hurts his leg again. They originally want to cut it off, but he's like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Just like reset the bone. So that's what Chicory does.
Mm-hmm.
They give him enough morphine to knock him out. Then they keep going on their way.
They promise him to leave a trail of four rocks.
Yeah, so they can find him.
At first they weren't going to, though, I think, right?
Yeah, but I think as they go and they see, like Matthew Fox is noticing different things, they start leaving more and more.
The trail for him.
Mm-hmm. So then
the brutality starts.
That's really the only way to say it. The brutality starts again.
Well,
and
you hear the kind of howling.
You hear the howling.
Which is a pretty, like, vicious, cool idea. You find out afterwards what the howling is when Patrick Wilson returns to the fold.
Yeah. So, Matthew Fox gets his hand.
Well, he gets an arrow first to like the arm or something.
Yeah.
Right?
And his hand comes off.
Which you don't even like notice at first.
Yeah.
Right?
He gets sitting there later on.
He gets
with
the
sleeve on.
Then Chicory and
Chicory gets part of his fucking scalp taken off with an arrow.
Well, does his scalp actually come off?
No, part of it. Well, yeah, like a chunk of his forehead.
Of his forehead comes off, and Sheriff Hunt, Kurt Russell, they come running in. They see he goes to reach.
Kurt Russell gets a fucking arrow in the arm.
In the arm. Well, and then Matthew Fox
pops
hiding
it off,
and he goes to reach for the gun, and that's where his fucking hand comes off, and it's so quick and vicious and brutal.
They manage to kill the two troglodytes that are attacking them, and you immediately. You know Matthew Fox is dying. So as they're trying to patch him up, he's like, leave me the dynamite and my gun. He goes, but don't come back until I've used the dynamite. Yeah. So, you know, they sort of just look at him and he's like, you know, I'm too vain to live as a cripple, you know? Mm-hmm. And
which is like a great line.
You're like obviously there's nothing wrong with it, but he's clearly like, well dressed, like maybe from money, this and that. Like he is
built,
too vain.
Or he's built like money for himself.
Yeah.
Like he is intelligent.
Yeah.
He is. And what's like so like awesome about the scene and like terrible at the same time after that is that he doesn't even get to like go out the way he wanted to in a way.
They
don't make it
after
back.
They leave after Chicory and Kurt Russell leaves. Is it Sheriff Hunt? Is that his name?
Yeah. Sheriff Hunt. Like so Franklin Hunt.
I've been calling him fucking Kurt Russell. Cause I'm like, Kurt Russell's cool enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you just like Kurt Russell.
Cause Kurt Russell's cool enough.
But we've been calling everybody except Richard Jenkins, I think. Cause Chicory just sounds cool.
And it's like a cute nickname.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, and Chicory's kind of also like, we haven't really talked about it. He's kind of like the punching bag, but he's very sweet about it. Like even when Patrick Wilson flips out, which isn't often in the movie, but it happens twice. He's like, my wife, he gets called an imbecile by Patrick Wilson earlier in the movie. And he's like, I'm sorry I called you that. And he's like, it's okay. He goes, my wife used to call me an imbecile. It was kind of nice. I missed it. Like, he's very sweet.
He talks so much. Even Kurt Russell tells him, like,
please shut up.
Please, enough, you know.
But he respects Kurt Russell. Like, it's a very good dynamic.
Matthew Fox, who's Brooder, by the way.
Fucking
that's his name.
So good.
Tells him, like, insults, like if at all you ever do talk, stop.
He's like, I'm a pack mule. He's like, do pack mules talk?
But I feel like Brooder, like Patrick Wilson, Matthew Fox respects him though.
Absolutely. Like, I don't get the feel like Matthew Fox kind of acts distant from everyone else.
Yes.
But I don't know if that's a defense mechanism from having losing everyone.
I think it's absolutely defense mechanism.
Because
and that's what I loved about the characters in the movie. There is no backstabbing betrayal, and I think there is a respect amongst everybody.
Yeah, if you've watched any kind of westerns, there's almost always some sort of fucking backstab or betrayal.
Yeah.
Treasure of the Sierra Madre, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yes.
There's always some sort of like, ooh, there's someone within the group is going to betray someone else.
Someone has bad intentions.
And even Chicory is like, I don't know how I feel about Brooder, but... Mm-hmm. Like really,
Well, even when he kills the thieves, you know, like they don't like kick his ass to the curb and say get the fuck out of here. We need him and we're gonna have to continue this mission. Like
he's like question my morality later. After we've
and that's it. They just move on.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they still protect him. So when he's getting stabbed, they don't let the guy kill him. Patrick Wilson fucking shoots the guy.
Yeah. So and I admire that so much about this. It is just a straightforward story.
Yeah.
To save like these people that they love or respect or their friend.
I love twists and turns in movies and stuff like that. But sometimes a straightforward movie is good enough, you know. And I wouldn't even say this is good enough. I would say this is just plain good.
Yeah. And it's. When it's beautiful, when it's like excellent writing, beautiful cinematography, when the story...
It's the first draft of the story.
Yeah, which was all finished. This movie was done in 21 days.
And it was the first... Let me explain something.
On a $1.8 million budget.
There are fucking movies that have had reshoots and rewrites out the fucking wazoo, and they suck. This movie... is the first draft of the script and it was done in 21 days. Each take maybe was like two or three takes at best. It took 21 days and it's a fucking phenomenal movie.
Mm-hmm.
that says something about the writing, about the directing, about the acting.
The acting. Mm-hmm. That also says something about like how everybody was able to function.
The cohesiveness of the entire cast.
Not just the cast itself, but the crew working with everybody.
Yeah.
So my hat's off to them. Which absolutely. I don't normally wear a hat.
Yeah, same.
Unless it's like something.
I got a big head. I can't wear hats.
Yeah. Well, now I get those, what do they call those hats? The boonie caps?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're comfortable.
Oh, okay. That's good.
For the sun, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So I was saying about Bruder, Matthew Fox, doesn't even get to go out in the blaze of glory that he wanted to, because the minute like he turns his head, he gets basically a tomahawk to
a skull tomahawk to his head. But he does kill the one throwing the tomahawk. So it's like a, you know?
Yeah. It's a
he gets hit in the face, and they both die.
He was hoping to take out as many as he could.
Because he says, leave me with the dynamite.
But
he also confirms the answer of how many Indians he's killed, which is 116.
120, I think he says.
I think he says 116.
Whatever. But what we left out also, though, they managed to find the cave entrance, which is high above the ground, where the other troglodytes are.
You don't really see the entrance until they get knocked out by the troglodytes.
Well, no, he sees it, but you don't see them going in. He notices. But you see the cave entrance, but then you realize afterwards where
it's
up high when they get pulled up by the rope.
So the troglodytes eventually more come and
take out Sheriff Hunt and Chicory in a brutal fashion.
I thought he was dead there.
Oh, I thought he was gonna get killed right there, which would have just been like, oh,
that would have been a fucking sucker punch to the goddamn throat. Like,
you're fucking taking out my boy.
Yeah, right now.
Right now, when they put the bone in his mouth, I thought he was gonna slam it all the way through, but they just knock him out. Cracks him over the head and knocks him out.
So. Chicory gets shot in the arm with an arrow, and they get and again they stop once they're passed out, and you hear this like howl coming from one of the troglodytes. Not issue up until this point with the movie, but I was just like, that's very interesting that they have these howls, considering this movie is very grounded in reality.
Yeah, like what the F?
That being said, once they get thrown into the cages, you see that the deputy and the wife are still there. And then we're gonna blaze past this because I don't want to talk about it too long. They kill the deputy in the most fucking horrific fashion I've ever seen, and it's sad, and he's talking the entire time.
Well, What I really, really liked about this part is Deputy Nick basically tells Sheriff Hunt what happened, like that the David Arquette's character
wasn't just the scene we saw in the past. He's like destroyed these grave sites.
Destroyed the grave sites. They followed him.
Yeah, he's a killer.
He's a killer. They wanted him, and then they took everybody else in the room.
For food.
And please. Because
they said, where is he? And she just goes, they ate him.
And then
matter of fact.
And I like that he said, if you make it out of here, return most of my stuff belong to my brother. Make sure
he gets them.
And I love the part where Sheriff Hunt says, the cavalry's coming. We're going to fucking destroy these people. Yeah. They're going to rip them to shreds. And then Chicory's like, why'd you lie to him? You know, like, did I not know something? The cavalry's coming?
He's like, I thought you had another plan. And he's like, no, I don't.
He's like, so why did you lie to him? And he's like, just to...
to make him feel better.
To die
knowing he was going to be avenged.
And I thought that was a great scene and a great line. It's so, like, oh, wow, they threw in this little thing to make him like feel better before he dies.
Yeah. Brutally, by the way.
They strip him naked. They
scalp him. They shove his scalp in his mouth. They ham it into his mouth, and then they turn him upside down and split him in half.
Yeah. Right from his cock down to his.
And then they rip him apart. It's rough. Yeah. Like, it's gruesome. It's
definitely
brutal.
One of the most brutal scenes I've seen without. I know this might sound weird. I don't want to say like being overkill, but just being a natural, brutal scene, if that makes
sense. Again, very grounded in realism, right? Like, there's no like huge blood splatter. There's no, the screams are like realistic. They're, you know, even earlier in the movie when Patrick Wilson has to have his leg reset, right? Mm-hmm. You assume when they pan out and you hear like the thud, mm-hmm. you assume you're going to hear a scream, mm-hmm. but you don't.
No, it's him just going.
And then he probably just passed out from the mm-hmm. pain. Because in reality, that's how it is. And I think Red Letter Media had made mention of like the sound design in this movie. It's not like Argento-ish with the like the smushy like blood and gut mm-hmm. sounds. It's very just matter of fact.
It's grounded in reality.
Thuds. Mm-hmm. So we cut back to Patrick Wilson waking up from his morphine coma after having his leg reset. Mm-hmm. And he starts on his journey and he manages to kill a couple of the troglodytes. Yeah,
he follows the rocks.
Ends up killing some of the troglodytes. He then looks at one of them and he's like, what is that, jewelry? And he realizes it's something implanted in their neck. So he cuts it out. And that's the, like, it's from an animal and that's the noise making the howling sounds.
The whistling sound.
It was like a voice box from an animal. And
or something that, they make themselves.
Well, no, I think they mentioned that it's like from an animal.
Oh, did they? Okay.
And I thought that was such a great like thing in the movie where it's like, of course that's what it was. Everything else has been so grounded in reality. We know humans, you know, regardless of if they're troglodytes mm-hmm. can make that sound. It's a fucking howling sound like a wolf is making mm-hmm. it. It's a, like the fact that they even went that far to say like, look, these creatures have evolved to take the voice box from an animal that can make this sound so they can communicate with each other.
And then transplant it into themselves.
And then,
like their young ones.
And then as they grow older, you know, like it's mm-hmm. just very, very well done.
Yeah. And you know, and then it's like, oh, the invalid saves the day.
Right. But like he's, you know, earlier in the movie, like he was kind of complaining that he couldn't work.
Yeah,
and then the wife is like, hey,
you know, I'm
you get to be home with me.
Yeah. Don't you love me? I love you. Like you have to be the idiot that's go up there. You have to feel like you have to do things, you know, like, so.
Then later on, she's like, you know, he's like, you take such good care of me. What can I do for you? And she's like, read the poem to me. You wrote when you were away. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's not a poem. Mm-hmm.
Like, but it was a cute scene that when he goes to save her, he takes the poem, like, I'm going to read it to you. It was a powerful moment.
Yeah.
Where you, like, it's funny how, like, you're shitting on Tombstone for the love scene, right? Like, the romantic part.
I just don't think it was done well.
Right. No. This is not, like, you're shitting on it.
This is not in your face. Right.
Right. But where here, it's like, he loves his wife. He's going to go save her. He takes the
poem. It's also not so much of the story. That's part of my problem.
But you admire the little, like.
Oh, yeah, no. I admire. I'm going to go and get my fucking wife back. Yeah,
but he takes the love, the poem.
I actually don't even remember that.
He does.
That's awesome.
He takes the poem with him and he says.
Because he had read it by himself after she left. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's not a poem. And he like puts it away and it's like.
But he's like, in his mind.
We say like a lot, by the way.
Yeah, we do. He takes the poem because. Part of it, I believe, is in his mind, she may not be coming back, but if he finds her, no matter what, if she's dying, if he's going to read it to her the minute, like,
they're together again.
So I found that to be very touching.
Yes, I agree.
Where, like I said, like, you're shitting on Tombstone because of their love scene, because it was like, you know. Like,
yeah, it was silly in a movie that was pretty
violent and, like
down to her.
Yeah. Where this, it's a... It was cute. It was touching.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm fucking reading this to her. She takes good care of me. She loves me. She adores me. Yeah. I couldn't even read her this fucking poem because I'm so pride, you know, and I'm not lovey dovey like that. He was going to read her the poem.
Yeah.
Which the assumption is he reads it. You don't see it anymore, which there's no need to see it.
Right. That would have been stupid.
Yes.
If he was like, I'm going to read this poem to you as we're running away from the cannibals.
Yeah.
That would have been stupid.
It would have been stupid. But he took it with it. You know, he has it, you know, most likely, maybe not right then and there. At some point he's going to read it to her. It was touching. I enjoyed it.
So they get the smart idea while they're in the caves They have the morphine. They're gonna poison.
Did we even mention that Russell Crowe loses? Russell loses fingers.
Yeah, he's trying to like wake up. They're trying to open the cage as they're killing the deputy Nick, and he gets two fingers cut off.
Oh, fucking brutal!
And it's like, just like, but the brutality happens so quickly.
Yeah, you don't even
realize it half the time. Yeah, like the
and
fact
then you're
that
just like, oh my god, his fingers.
Chicory
are on the
lost his forehead.
Yeah. Somebody lost some skin there.
Yeah, but it's so quick in the violence, but that's how like violence
that's how real
is.
Violence is.
Right,
yeah.
It's quick. It's fucking
it's
psychotic.
Weird, right? You watch, I mean, we know what's going on in the world, but you watch like these videos online and you're like, oh my God, did that person just like shoot that person on that video?
And yeah.
Like, he's bleeding on the
floor.
There
was a video in New York of like a girl getting out of her car, just walking up to a random girl and shooting her in the head and walking back to her car and driving off.
Well, I saw a video of a guy attacking someone at ATM and I was like, he just macheted him. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, there's blood everywhere.
Real violence, everyday violence
is quick and rapid and brutal. Yeah, and I barely noticed
that it happens, and then you see his fucking fingers bleeding. You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, and his fingers are on the floor.
Yeah,
but yeah, they bring back the morphine.
They bring back the morphine to see if they can poison as many of the Indians as they
troglodytes.
The troglodytes.
The cannibals. Yes.
And they
asked the doctor what like impact, how much,
like how
eat.
Many to, you know, so they pretend like they're going to drink it and then they take them away, the flask away. And then one guy drinks and then spits it out. Then the other guy drinks a bunch of it. And then the third guy doesn't drink any of it and throws it in the fire. It's like in a little metal.
It's a flask.
Like it's a flask. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. So later on, you hear them screaming, the troglodytes, and they're like, oh, they figured it out, right? Because one of them passed out.
Yeah, and the doctor
is dead.
Well, the doctor says most likely one will piss out, one will die.
Yeah,
and that's it.
And then that's it. Yeah. He's like, well, two more ain't bad, you know.
Yeah, so they get pissed off and they take it out on Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
because he had the flask.
Well, right? Yes,
he was the one drinking from the flask.
So they open the gate, and at first he like it manages to like tackle one to the ground, and then Chicory tries to get out. And they kind of lock him back in the cage before anything can happen.
And then the next brutality scene happens.
This fucking movie. So they like knock him to the ground. They cut open his stomach with the face tomahawk, the jaw tomahawk. And then they stick
the burning flask
into his stomach. And it is like you hear him like screaming, but not like howling in pain. So as it's happening, like they take the gun that they had confiscated off of him, and I don't know if they shoot him right away.
Well, they're sticking it in him and just like trying to like see if it goes off, and they're not figuring it out. And
yeah,
then
he's got it on his like junk.
Yeah, and which tells them something. They know what the junk is.
But they hear, but at that point, that's when they hear the gunshot coming from outside. And it's Patrick Wilson come to save the day.
Yes.
He's literally like crawling on his hands and knees at that point to get to his wife. And Kurt Russell essentially sacrifices himself by screaming that he's in here.
Yeah.
And at that point, the guy figured out how to work the gun.
Yeah. He opened it and reclicked it, and that loaded the. He pulled down the hatch, like, and it loaded
and it shoots
the gun
him in the stomach.
In the stomach, yeah.
And then you think that's it for Kurt Russell. As the guy's walking away to go shoot Patrick Wilson, he takes the face tomahawk and fucking cuts his toes off. The guy howls, falls to the ground, and then he chops his fucking head off. Yeah. And he's still like bleeding out, but Patrick Wilson shows up. He manages to get his wife and Chicory out. He's like, "How you doing, Sheriff?" He's like, "You gonna be okay, Sheriff?" And he goes, "No."
And they figure out there's three or four more. And he's got three bullets. So
he goes, "Leave me here. Leave me the gun." And then the best line in the movie, because Chicory throughout the movie has been talking about his wife who's deceased. You see him talking to her grave. He brings her up. It's very sweet, very sad.
Yes.
And before Kurt Russell left on the trip, he tells his wife, like, he's like, "I have to go. It's my duty." And she's like, "All right, just make sure you come back." So he tells Chicory, you know, please say goodbye to my wife and I'll say hello to yours.
Yeah.
And even saying it kind of makes me want to cry.
You're so soft.
I know. But like they're acting toward each other in the movie. Like you see that he's like sad that he's dying, obviously, you know, because, but even Chicory wants to say something, but doesn't know what to say for the first time in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he just and waves
always,
him on.
He's always talking.
He's always talking. He's
clueless on what to say.
And so he just waves him on and he leaves with Patrick Wilson and the O'Dwyers. And as they're walking out of the cave, you know, Kurt Russell's like, leave me that gun and go the way you came back in. Mm-hmm. You end up seeing like one of the pregnant women who...
I think there was two of them actually.
Well, the Mrs. O'Dwyer had said there's two pregnant women. Mm-hmm. But one of the pregnant women that you see that they pass has a missing arm and has like spikes in her eyes.
Yeah, I think she had missing legs even. Weren't they like completely amputated?
Yeah, I don't
amputated?
Know what their well, they're there deal
just to give,
is.
Just like to give, they just birth.
Yeah, which is mm-hmm. fucking... horrific.
Yeah, they're clearly
like they're, I mean, they call them savages in the movie a bunch of times. It's
right. For good reason.
Right. They're like cave dwelling cannibals. It's really just like they're not fucking human. They're barely human.
They're
right.
Barely human. Mm-hmm.
And I like that they make the distinction in the movie that these aren't American Indians.
Yeah,
they're fucking just different, a whole different breed.
They're just like cannibals. Yeah, that live in the. Yeah. They're just monsters, and that's it. There's nothing else.
So the movie ends, Patrick Wilson and his wife and Chicory get away, mm-hmm. and you hear in the distance three gunshots. Mm-hmm. So he managed to kill the rest of them.
Most likely.
Mm-hmm. And then that's
how Chicory says, like, he got him. He got him.
Yeah, like, he got him. Yeah. And
The movie ends.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what else to say about it. Like, it's just
there's really much else to say.
You know, it's a beautiful movie. It's well done. It's sad. Not a revenge story, but like a rescue story.
It's a rescue mission,
you know. It's very Saving Private Ryan-ish, you know. Not everybody's gonna come out alive.
It's a rescue mission where the soldiers build relationships. There's arguments amongst them, there's jokes amongst them, and then there's the final battle rescue mission where not everybody gets out alive.
Yeah,
and that's basically what it comes down to. And it ends the way, you know, they save one of the...
Technically, I would even say they save their own town because...
Yes.
Kurt Russell says before they leave, he's like, I'm going to make sure to get as many of them as possible because they know where Bright Hope is.
Yes, that's true. And the sheriff saves the town.
Yeah.
Those monsters now know where to go to get food.
And
there's a good chance that whenever they want, they'll come in and
kill
people.
So he kills them, yeah.
Well, they attacked the farm. They killed one of the guys.
Yeah.
You know, and then they went to go find David Arquette and whoever was in the room with him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I highly enjoyed this movie, and I'll definitely give it multiple rewatches.
Yeah. I mean, if you can take the brutality, and it is brutal, definitely. You know, even just for the fucking acting and dialogue alone, man. Like, never mind everything else about the movie that's so good. The acting and the dialogue, that's it. I would say that after I watched the movie, I watched the Red Letter Media thing talking about it, and they kind of like vaguely compare it to The Green Inferno by Eli Roth.
I think. Yeah. I never seen it.
And
I have no desire to see it.
Yeah, I have no desire to see it either. But they made a good point to say like the Italian old school cannibal movies that maybe this takes influence from, this feels more like an authentic one as opposed to Eli Roth's movie that's just schlocky fucking
bad
cut
acting.
Him up bad acting. Mm-hmm. The guy in the review even makes joke of like, oh, you find out at the end of the movie that it's all a dream. That
was
it's
just really a dream?
No, apparently, but the surviving girl.
Yes, I remember. I was like falling asleep when I was watching it.
But I thought that was
great.
She's
just a shitty actress. No, I know with this one, like I said, he wrote the director, S. Craig Zahler, had wrote the script for this in 2007. Just think about that.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to see another movie he wrote called, I think it's called The Silent Blackout. He didn't direct that one. It was one of his first scripts.
What's it about?
A night in a asylum where like they're stuck there because of storms. Like a storm going on.
Well,
did you say you hate asylums?
Yeah.
Like asylum movies?
Yes, they're terrible.
Like the company asylum as opposed to, like, what do you mean?
Like crazy houses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You hate those kind of movies?
Yeah.
I thought you liked Session 9.
No, actually, I never really liked Session 9.
What the fuck are you talking about? You and I watched Session 9. We both said we enjoyed it. Session 9, where the guys are in the asylum and they're listening to the tapes and they're clearing the asbestos out.
I don't think I made it through that entire movie.
You did, though, because we watched it together.
We did?
Yes.
I don't remember.
You didn't like the Donald Pleasance one?
Alone in the Dark?
Yeah.
They weren't in the asylum, though. They were in the
house. But it's technically an asylum movie.
Come on.
How do you not like asylum? All right, whatever.
Because most of the asylum movies are like bad movies.
I don't think that's true.
But anyway, name another one.
I can't think of any other.
Why not?
Because maybe I just haven't seen as many.
Okay.
Whatever. I just, if I haven't seen a ton, you know. Although that's the other one I was thinking of is the one.
The only asylum one I like is Batman Arkham Asylum.
Stupid. but no.
I would have to watch Session 9
again.
That's the one with, what's his face? From
David Caruso.
Oh, David Caruso's career. Quick, do an impression of David Caruso's career. Ike, do an impression of David Caruso's career.
Stupid.
What's he done lately?
David Caruso?
Yeah.
I don't know. He was on CSI Miami for a long time.
20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, we highly recommend this movie. And yes, our comparisons, the Tombstone is going to be obvious because fucking Kurt Russell. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I think we'll definitely be doing, I want to say more. I think we should do a complete episode on VFW because of how much we like that movie.
Yes.
And the fact that it's another Bonfire movie.
Bonfire Legends.
Bonfire Legends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have to rewatch it again just to get it all.
Obviously.
Obviously.
I would rewatch it again too. Just because I enjoy
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I just remember it being funny and violent.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I liked all the characters in it.
Same.
Yes. It's got a great cast of like legends. Yeah. Bonfire Legends. Legends.
Legends. Yeah. Yeah. Stephen Lang. You got William Sadler.
Mm-hmm. What's his face from
Cobra
Karate
Kai.
Kid? Cobra Kai. Yeah.
Yeah. Martin Cove.
Martin Cove.
Yeah. The guy from The Warriors and The Longest Yard. Warriors come out to play.
Warriors. A great, great movie. It wasn't S. Craig Zahler, but it was, I don't know if I said it in our last one, it was Standoff at Sparrow Creek.
Yeah.
Slower paced, but my boy James was in that one.
I'll give them all a watch.
Give them all a watch. You have it? I don't know what you're waiting for.
I know.
The only one I don't know, I mean, I didn't even know about this one, but I'm on their website. It's called The Package. It's got Steve Austin and Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, that was probably like maybe that was like their first one. Yeah. But now they're there. I mean, for God's sakes, like they got great actors in all their movies.
Maybe except for that first one.
Maybe except for that one. I mean, I'm just hold on. I'm just going to click on it and see what it's about. Just out of curiosity. I mean, it's called The Package. So who knows what's the package? Which package are they talking about? Just out of curiosity. I'm going to IMDb right now. I want to just see what it's about. There's a lot of movies called The Package, by the way.
I believe it.
Well, for one, it was 2013, so clearly it's an older movie. A courier. Oh, I hate when these drop downs pop up. Okay. A courier for a local crime lord must deliver a mysterious package while being chased by a horde of unusual gangsters.
Kind of sounds like the Transporter.
Yeah. I think The Transporter came out first, though. Transport in like 2008 or something like that.
Maybe. All right, guys, that's going to be it for today's episode. As always, join us next time.
Bye.